This is the continuation of an interview with Eileen and Bill Pearson. This will be tape number MPFH2, side A. Now, Eileen, tell me a little bit about the schooling of the children at Millers Point when they went to school here.
Well, Bill went to Bursary in his... when you went to school. Maori went to Bursary. Frank was very good at tech drawing. And the brother told me that the other one had a very IQ, but no interest. And it stopped him one day and he said, "Who came top of this subject?" And he said, "I don't know." He said, "Well, go and have a look." And he didn't care where he came. But the other two weren't that bright, were they?
The two youngest ones, no.
Yeah.
What was the school like? And where was the school? Which school?
Abbotson in Gloucester.
The boys went to the Maris Brothers at St Patrick's in Harrington Street, and Mari went to the Sisters of Mercy in St Patrick's also. It was a girls' school over the road from the Brothers. It was only a very small school when I was there. It would have only been probably... Not many more than 100, you know, from third class primary up to third year high school. It would have only been 100 kids.
And mostly made up of the Pearsons.
And
the Bergens, they were related, weren't they?
Yeah, we went in Sydney, Stedford, a fifth class choir from the school. And we didn't have enough kids in fifth class. You know, you'd have a minimum of 25 kids in the choir. So we had to get kids from sixth class and fourth class and everything else to make up the minimum number. And we won the Stedford.
Were they good teachers at school?
I guess so.
You're a good student.
Well, as Mum said, I won a state bursary and Mari won a Catholic bursary.
You know, Tom Pearson, he comes here the next time marks to you in St Pat's. Mm. I didn't know that.
I think they were strict, but they were pretty good teachers.
And you were a Catholic family. Did you go to church much at all, Eileen?
Yeah. No, I didn't.
That's okay.
No, Mum's not. Dad was a religious...
Who went every Sunday and...
He used to take the plate up at St Patrick's 11 o'clock mass, but when he was a kid, he went to school at St Pat's too, and my grandfather was a gambler, and you know, they were always short of money and that, and first pair of shoes he had, the brother at the school took him to St Vincent de Paul and bought him. He was in third class, and winter and summer he just didn't have any shoes, went to school barefoot. The brother took him to St Vincent de Paul and bought him a pair of boots for 2 shillings out of his own pocket. And I don't think my father ever forgot it because he worked for the St Vincent de Paul, you know, for years and years. Was a pretty committed Catholic. You know, used to take up the plate at church and what have you.
Do you recall any strikes or any industrial disputes involving the men around here in this area? Were there anything?
Yeah.
Tell me about that. Which one?
Oh, well, the last big wolf strike, my youngest son, Owen, who died 18 months ago. Owen wasn't in that strike, was he? He left it, but it was a big industrial strike.
That was when Patrick's were locking out the wharfies.
Changed the conditions.
But I remember a couple, you know, when I was sort of growing up, because a lot of my friends from around here were wolf labourers, and they'd be on strike. I think the longest one went for about 6 weeks, and there were a couple of shorter ones, but, you know, they'd be without pay all that time. That's why my father didn't want to work on the wharves, because, you know, you had to go on strike. You didn't have your escape if you didn't. And so he preferred to burn the wool swords.
Well, your father and I went to Melbourne to the Melbourne Cup once, and when we come back, He's expecting to go back. There was 5 weeks strike. And that's why he used to like to save his money, because he thought if he didn't have the money, that's how he got beaten in the strike. You know, if you had the money, you could see. And the showground and all was filled with wool. And they just had to strike one when they had a vote, and they voted to go back because the men had no money, and the wives were telling them to get back to work. So it was only about 6 that voted not to go back.
I can't recall that strike.
Oh, I do. Straight after the Melbourne Cup that we went down to. And as we come back from that.
Which year approximately would it have been, what period? What time frame are we talking about?
When? About 70, 1970.
Yeah, it would be 1970. Yeah. Do you remember what won the Melbourne Cup?
No. He used to go, he'd be listening to the races, and he'd want to go down the toilet, and he'd say to me, "Now listen for this horse. See where it comes." By the time they'd run through every horse, I wouldn't know which one was his.
Talking about strikes again, were there any you remember earlier than 1970? Were there any in the 30s or 40s?
Well, there was that strike in the 70s.
What about earlier? Do you remember any before then?
Can you remember any?
Yeah, there were a couple in the early 60s that my friends that were working on the wars were involved in. And, I think the longest one I can remember was about 6 weeks, and then the that Patrick's one, that was quite recent, 5 years ago or something.
What did the other mothers used to tell you about those sort of things, Eileen, when the strikes were on?
I didn't talk about them.
Mum, the stores wouldn't be on strike when the wharfies were. They'd be working, so she really, probably didn't have the same shortage of money as they did, the wharfies' wives.
Right, sure. How does the area change? What's happened to the physical look of Millers Point and all the time you've been here?
There's a big change since the Housing Commission took over. Big change.
Yeah. Well, all the houses are the same.
Oh, the houses have stayed here.
Yeah.
But I don't know hardly anybody in the street, for one thing. Well, you knew everybody. Everybody grew up here. Mm. Big change.
But the actual buildings, there hasn't been much change.
No, the Housing Commission workmen don't do a good job. They don't do a good job at all. If they did a good job, one thing, I needed new light in the kitchen. The man had to come, my grandson's an electrician. I had to come 3 times, and only because my granddaughter was here. He couldn't do anything twice he come. And the light was on when he left, but it didn't go on when I switched it on. He had to come back, and it didn't go on when he come back, so he had to fix it again. And then Craig said it would have cost the Housing Commission more for him to come 3 times than if he'd done it right in the first place. And that's if they put up new guttering, there's more paint to be seen than there is solid guttering. If they did put a good quality stuff into it. And they steal everything in your house. One of my sons said, "Don't let them in, Mum. I had a good hair broom, proper hair broom, and they took it. And I went over to a hardware store and asked for a hair broom. He said, "You won't get a hair broom now." He said, "I can get you one 50-50. Well, I've watched that broom every time anybody come into the... Because the plastic ones, the dirt sticks to the bow, And they took Owen's knife. He had a knife there. He's building a ship. Toy ship on the table, and I went to close it, but it was too tough for me to close, so instead of hiding it, I left it on the table and it went. So, and this man brought in about 4 boys with him, And I took the number of his car. I didn't know the knife had gone then, but I'd still sort of took the number of his car. And I rang him up and I said, don't say anything to the boys, just see. I thought it'd be a boy. I said, just see which one produces it. And he didn't ring me up. I rang him up and I said, have you found anything about that knife? Because it was worth about $400. And he said, yes, I saw it. And he said, and I sacked him. Well, if he found the boy, he should have made him bring it back to me. So I thought, probably yourself took it, you know.
Did it ever come back?
No.
Wow. So you don't trust them much, huh?
No, no. And see that mantelpiece? Every house had that in. A lady come in here, like the next door neighbour that had lived there all the time. She died and somebody else come in. And she come in and she said, oh, I envy your mantelpiece. I said, you've got one. There's three mantelpieces, one in the front room, one upstairs. She said, no, they took it. They just put a board across. Well, it's not very nice just having a board across there. The cedar doors, they put these kind of doors on. They just took the cedar doors and sell them because it'd be three times worth. No, they don't do a good job.
Right. What about the heritage? You're in a heritage area here. Is your house also classified as heritage?
Not that I know.
Don't think so. No.
The house that Tommy Pearson lived in as heritage, and the one that Bill's father was born in up at the bus stop, there's and one in the top of Windmill Street. They said they paid millions for them, and they're not sold. They're only leased for 99 years, and it'll cost them that much to do them up.
Right, sure. There were lots of boarding houses in the area, weren't there? The boarding houses for the seamen. Were there any around you?
No. We're not allowed to take boarders.
They were all tenants for the Harbour Trust and then Maritime Service Board.
There's a few down under the bridge there. What street is it?
Lower Ford Street. Yeah, they were always tenants. Boarders in those places.
Not in this part of them.
Because they're really big places around there.
What do you remember about the bridge being built?
Well, the bridge was opened 2 years after I came to Sydney. And you couldn't have put another person on this around the area the day the bridge was opened. I'll never forget that. Never. Never seen this area packed with people so much. But I didn't live here then. I wasn't married.
But did you go to the opening day of the bridge? Were you there?
Yeah. I was working down Circular Quay. And it was just packed.
Mm.
Never seen so many people.
Yeah. I remember the day the war finished. I remember all the American sailors and soldiers and everyone was dancing in the street. There used to be a lot of US servicemen used to hang around this area. My brother Frank ran out of the butcher shop across the road, just in Argyle Place there, and went under a cab hit him, taxi cab, and he had to go to hospital. Damaged his leg, but it wasn't that bad. And the cab had an American soldier in the cab. And of course, Mum ran out of the shop hysterical and everything. And brother's lying there. And the soldier gave the cab driver a pound, said, take him up to the hospital and back again. Never saw him again. Just an extremely good guy.
One of the girls went out with an American, just one of Murray's friends, you know, just saying, oh, how polite and how nice. "Oh, I'll help you up the footpath." I said, "Oh, Barbara, don't tell me you can't get up the footpath on your..." I said, "But getting up the footpath, all the rest of her life." And she's appreciating the fact that they helped you up the footpath.
All right, what was a nice one. Was there a good relationship between the Catholics and the Protestants at Miller's Point, or was there any friction?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I don't think... I don't know.
Yeah, there's...
I don't think anybody.
We had a few run-ins with the kids from Ford Street Public School, but it was, you know, it was just...
normal thing.
Yeah, no, nothing... Well, nothing deep-seated about it.
My neighbour next door, she wasn't a Catholic. She belonged to the Trinity. She used to ask me to make a cake for the fates and that they had. I'd do it. I just didn't care. You know, we were good friends.
Now, when you came here to number 5 Windmill Street in the 1960s, was the house much the same as it is today?
Yeah.
No change?
No change.
And the nun that taught my daughter at school was born in this house. And when my daughter got cancer, she said, "I don't know your married name, as I told you we lost." She said, "Murray, I don't know your married name, so I'm writing to the address that I went to school from," sort of thing. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, actually, the pastoral team at the St. Patrick's Church... three of the nuns there that sort of do community work around here, they're all local girls, all grew up on Miller's Point, and they're all in the nuns. You know,
when's Tommy Pearson's sister?
That's Mary Pearson.
Sister Gemma.
Her name's Sister Gemma. And then there's two De Montfort girls, Judy and Jill De Montfort. They're both nuns. I don't know what their religious name is, but... yeah, they're a family you'd probably be worth interviewing, the De Montforts.
Montforts?
The De Montforts.
Oh, can you give me the address later?
Well, you'd have to contact her through the church, either Jill or Judy De Montfort.
Right.
And
one of their brothers was a jockey.
They had three. There were three boys, and the three boys all played first grade cricket for Glebe, and the youngest one, Alan, he played for the state Colts, New South Wales Colts, and the two girls both became nuns. Yes. A very interesting family.
Would Sister Gemma Pearson know about them?
Yeah, she
know where
she
they
lives
live?
With them. Yeah.
She lives with them.
Yeah.
And what's the relationship of Gemma to you?
Cousins.
Oh.
Second cousin.
Right.
Her father and my father were cousins.
Right. Okay. Now, Eileen, I'm interested to find out about, say, what there was available in this area for medical facilities. What did you
now?
Do? In the days when you were younger.
Oh, I used to take the children.
If the kids were sick and so on, where would you take
them? Take them up to Sydney Hospital.
Well, that was the closest and the only hospital. Yeah. Wasn't there a doctor who lived in Miller's Point there?
Well, if there were... Oh, there was Dr. Johnson lived up in...
Dr. Johnson lived up in York Street, or had his surgery up in York Street. He was the nearest, but there was a St John's ambulance lady called, we used to call her Nurse Williams. She lived up in Argyle Place, and she, if any of the kids got hurt, you know, it's nothing serious enough to have to go to the hospital, she'd always put a bandage on you, or, you know, that sort of
and
thing.
And she was like my grandmother. Every child that my mother-in-law had, she nursed her with them. Sent up for Nurse Williams.
Did she?
Mm. Okay. So no emergencies ever, really bad ones, happened to you, your kids, did they? Anyone in any time got seriously hurt in an accident or anything?
Oh, Bill got his nose broken in football.
Frank... had that run-in with the cab that I told you about. That's probably the most serious. And, I fell off a gate. We were trying to get into this kid's backyard to play with his toys. And I was climbing over the gate, and my brother Frank, he got the gate open and pushed it. I came down flat on my face on those cobblestones.
And guess what I said? when he's come home with his nose broken. Oh, and he had the best nose in the house.
What about crime? Was there much crime around? Were there, you know, gangs and so on? Was it dangerous around here?
Well, we didn't know.
No, not in our day. There was sort of the odd petty crime, I suppose you'd call it, like this fellow I was telling you about, Jimmy Morton. You know, he'd do a bit of thieving to supplement his income. And, can't remember any real... really bad people.
Good, okay. Because there was a push, you know, Rock's push.
And oh, there, yeah, that was yeah. Like a girl. Well,
that was in Young Griffo's day, the yeah. Rock's push.
Yeah, this girl came and she's telling, she had come with a boyfriend and she's telling, when Nan first, she called me Nan, she wasn't, I wasn't any. When Nan first come here, there was this and that and that. I said, Donna, you're tacking 100 years onto me. What happened 100 years before? It was much like it is now.
Now, very early on in the century, before anybody here was born, there was an influenza epidemic and there was a plague. There was the plague.
Yeah, did your parents... plague, didn't... That's what my mother knew. But my mother come from Forbes and, you know, she heard all these things. That's why she thought Millers Point was such a dreadful place. You're going there with one baby in your arms. You'll never get away from there.
So you didn't hear too many stories about those times, those very early times, did you, from anyone? Was it still strong in the memory of people?
I don't think so. They just seemed ordinary people.
I remember my grandfather talking about Frog Hollow. And I just thought it was, you know, just something he made up. He'd say it in a sort of joking way. He must have come from Frog Hollow, but I've since read there was an area in the rocks called Frog Hollow which they pulled down when the plague was on. And so there was an actual sort of area within the rocks that they called it. I don't know how it got its name, but it was pulled down. They pulled it all down and rebuilt.
For those people that don't know what this house here, number 5 Windmill Street, looks like, can you describe it for me, Eileen, especially as it was when you first moved in here? What was the layout like? Can you describe...
Do you want me to do it, Mum?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, you walk through the front door, down a hallway. On the right was a lounge room, or a TV room. Then the living room, which we're sitting in now. Kitchen. Then you walk down, that's covered in now, but it wasn't then. It's just it was an outside laundry and bathroom and toilet. Then you go upstairs, there's the 3 bedrooms and an upstairs veranda, which doubled as a bedroom for a while. And especially in summer, we'd sleep out there.
But it had movers, we took them down. That was glassed in. Because one son said to me, what did you take the louvers down for? And I said, because the kids were breaking them, because they only could fall into the street and would have fallen on them. And he said, well, I don't wake up and find somebody standing over me with a knife.
Right. So 3 bedrooms upstairs.
Yeah.
They're all upstairs. So where did you sleep?
In the front room I slept. And my husband, we had the front bedroom. The middle bedroom, David and Mari slept in that. David was a lot younger than Mari. And Frank and Bill slept in the back room. And somebody slept on the veranda, you know, with the door, because it was closed in.
Right. And it was comfortable? Was big enough, the house?
Oh, yeah. I was very happy with the change.
Yes, compared to the other one, it was a lot
bigger. We only had 4 rooms in the other house, and 6 rooms here.
Right, okay. How do you think living at Millers Point has influenced who you are now today? How has it influenced your life?
I just couldn't describe that. I'm happy living here. I don't want to leave here, but I realise I'm 92 this year. that I'm just suggesting to build places that I might go, because somebody's going to have to put me there.
You were talking nursing home, you mean?
Yeah. I'm willing to go, but I don't want to go before I have to. I don't want the kids to feel, oh, we put Mum in the nursing home. I want to go in when I've got to.
Sure, you haven't decided to do that yet, obviously.
No, but I'm interested in different places. Well, did you say Harry lives up in Darling House? And I met him. And I said, what's it like up there, Harry? And he said, it was good.
It's very...
But, and the boy that runs that, he knew my family. And he said, oh, tell your mother if she ever wants to relax, she's welcome to come up there. I said, why would I go up there to relax? I can relax as much as I want down here, can't I? I wouldn't go up there to relax.
Okay, you're not ready yet, I think. Well, it isn't a very nice place. We've seen it, yeah.
Yeah, I've been up there. I saw a new lady that was there and she was up there. She's...
Now, do you think you would have been a different person had you not sort of lived in Millers Point? Do you think your outlook on life might have been different?
No, I don't think so. I can't imagine it being different.
What about you, Bill? How do you feel about being, having grown up here in Millers Point? Would you be a different person?
Did you feel it was a disadvantage growing up here?
No, I don't think my values or anything have altered at all from... Or would have changed if I'd lived somewhere else.
But the values that you live today from here, they're from Millers Point. You might have had different values had you lived in another part of Sydney.
You're not going to offend me, Bill.
I may have, but I think all of us kids got our work ethic from our father. And I'm a young... None of us were ever out of work, and we all achieved in our chosen careers. I was general manager, life administration at Westpac. Frank was first class tradesman, and John Shannon, He had ordinary jobs, but he's always been a investor and speculator, and he's the wealthiest of the lot of us, and done the best.
I took him out the motor transport department to get a job, and he passed the thing. And we're sitting there waiting for. He said, "I suppose you'd say that fella had a good job," and I said, "Well, I suppose he has, Shan, because he's interviewing boys that are going to be there for the rest of their life." Well, he said, "I'd hate that job." And he said, "What's wrong with being a garbage man?" And I said, "Nothing. But you know yourself, if you're not doing well, the brother will say you'll end up by being a garbage man. You don't, oh, I don't know, you're out in the fresh air and you've got no worries." The brother told me he had the highest IQ in the class. And I thought, well, for all I know, this might be his IQ at work, because he's enjoyed his life, hasn't he?
Mm. Yeah, the three youngest all finished up going to public schools. Shanna, John, he wanted to go to Paddington junior high school because his mates went there. But he didn't do any work, but he was very bright. And he passed his intermediate. they had to do a book, one of Charles Dickens' books for the intermediate, the English exam. And the day he was away from school more than he was at it, but the day before the exam, he went and bought a classic comic with the story in it. And got an A in English in the media.
The brother said, the teacher said to him, "No matter what you do, I won't pass you," because he was paying no attention. So he's gone over to the paper shop and bought this book and read it and come to him.
The Tale of Two Cities, I think it was. I used to have those classic comics, which was a comic of, telling the Dickens story or whatever.
I'll just make an announcement. This is the end of tape number MPFH 2, side A. This is the start of tape number MPFH2 side B. You were talking earlier about values of Miller's Point. What are those values, do you think?
I think they neighbours would always help each other and never steal from each other. You could walk out, leave your door open, or leave your door open all night, no one would ever go into your house. If anyone was sort of having hard times, there was always someone to help you. So it was very strong neighbourly values, I think.
Right. Is there anything about living at Miller's Point that either of you dislike?
No, I think we're living in a really good spot. Well, they're paying millions to live here now. You know, not in houses like this, certainly, but all of the wharves have been all done up. The man that's got those people walking over the bridge paid about $5 million, but he's getting 150, I think, for each person who walks over the bridge.
Yeah.
But they're all paying big rents, and they're only living in the same area as us. They're not living the same type, because these houses have just been built. They're still building them.
I never wanted to live on Miller's Point when I got married. I just didn't want to bring my kids up here. And
for what reason, Bill?
I think it's just a pretty rough area, and it's worse now. There's drugs and things like that around, you know, and I just didn't want my kids to grow up here. I was happy enough, got no qualms about having lived here myself, but I think you can get in with the wrong types, and there's a lot more chance of that now, or when my kids would have been young. It's changed
since the Housing Commission took over. It has.
When were the biggest changes, Aileen, to this area? Is it only since the Housing
Commission? When the Housing Commission took over. Because there were all families that were born and bred here and knew each other. And
so what happened when the Housing Commission took over?
Well, I don't know.
I moved people in from the outer suburbs. Some really bad types moved in.
They wreck the houses, for one thing.
Some doing drugs. One person who never done anything to my mother or anything, but he's done some, you know, stupid things to other people that he hasn't got on with, you know, sort of super glued up their doorway and things like that. It's
a wonder they've left him in the house, really.
He's a bit of a menace, really, but he's probably the worst example, but there are some not very nice types around.
Well, I think they've only left him in the house because his wife's got the tenancy.
Have your relations been with the Department of Housing? Have they been generally good? Apart from the problems you already described?
Oh, they're very slack in their repair thing. Like before the Olympics, I'm sleeping in the front room and they put new roof right down the street. I could feel the rain. I was lucky my bed was on caster, so I was hoping to move it out of the way. They said, well, wait till the Olympics are over, because something was going to come down Windmill Street. They took 2.5 years to come and fix that.
So you had a leaking roof?
Yeah.
Mm. Wow, that's a tale that'll be...
Well, I waited till the Olympics before I even asked them about it, because they asked me to wait till I... And it was my granddaughter who told them how to fix it. She said, well, seeing you've been 3 times to fix it and it's still happening, why don't you take out how it was? Somebody who didn't know their job drilled holes about as big as an egg in a corrugated iron roof to put a television thing up. So naturally, it's come through.
Are you worried about traffic or noise or pollution here?
Well, the whole of Miller's Point is because two men had to be shot dead down on the Lower Road before the police had taken. I rang them up four times, Friday night and Saturday night. They don't live on Miller's Point, but they come with these really good cars and tear around the streets. And each time I rang up, they said, we've got no cars for the police to come up. But for some reason, they confronted the police and the police shot them down on the Lower Road, on Hickson Road.
Oh, yes, I've heard about it, yeah.
And all other people trying to sell some of the houses they've bought, you know. So I don't hear them now.
I stayed here one night. Mum had had to have something done to her eyes at the eye hospital, and I brought her home from the hospital and stayed the night. And I could never live here, you know, with the noise. I mean, it was kids out in the street. I went to bed about 11 o'clock. And these kids started playing touch football about 11:30 out in the street out the front there. They went till about 1 o'clock. I just went off to sleep because Mum takes a tablet and doesn't know a thing. And, just got off to sleep, and then all the cars start arriving. You know, people pulling up in their cars, slamming the door. They get here early to park so they could go to work. They park here and walk down, you know, into the city. I couldn't handle it.
When did you actually leave this area, Bill?
When I got married, 1966.
So you haven't lived here since?
No. I lived at Janelli, and then we built a house at Loftus, and then when my kids grew up and moved out, we moved up to Woiwoi.
But you're not used to living in the inner city anymore, obviously.
No.
Right.
But I didn't mind it at all, you know, when I was here.
Well, it was a different type of place. As I say, when television come in, like people, there was nothing for them to stay up for before television come in. Now, I even watch Andrew Denton and that, you know.
Right, sure. How do you feel about the proposed redevelopment on the Patrick Wharfs when Patrick's finally leave there? They're going to build things up there. Do you know much about that?
Well, I think if they build high-rise, it won't be too good. I hate the high-rise. You know, we go over that Anzac Bridge. And I just think no matter how much money I had, I wouldn't like to live in one of those flats. I wouldn't. At least what little bit of backyard we've got, I can hang out my washing in the sun.
Sure. So what do you think, either of you, is going to be the future of Miller's Point from now on?
Oh, I think the hotel keeper said to one of the boys, our rents wouldn't even pay the rates. But he said, then the rates never get paid. They just get passed from department to department. But the land's so valuable around here, but I can't see them keeping these houses.
Yeah. Well, Mum had a rent reviewed. She inherited some money from my young brother, the one that died. He had a property in the country, a small property, which we sold. So we had to tell Centrelink and the Housing Commission a report and change in your assets, and they increased her rent. But they tell you what the market rent is.
It's $450.
That's $450, you know, to rent them. Didn't an Asian woman knock on your door once and offered her $500 a week for the house? And my mother said, well, where am I going to live? She said, oh, you can just get a place somewhere else. Because if she did that, the Housing Commission would cancel a tenancy straight away.
Cancel their tenancy. But, you know, there's a bit of that goes on, I think.
You still have many friends in the area that you see? Are you friends with lots of people that you know?
Oh, I'm friends with everybody I know. Mr. Hanson stopped Jane the other day and said they thought a lot of me, and anything they could do for me they would, but he minds his own twin, you know. He's very good to his own. Three had three boys. They've minded their children so they can get homes for themselves, the boys.
Is that Bill Hanson?
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. He's contacted us. He wants to be interviewed as well.
Does he?
Yeah.
He's a nice man.
Lives in Tookley.
Yeah, he's got a house in Tootley, but he only lives a couple of doors down, his wife.
Oh, he lives in
the area. Because he had a crippled brother from birth, and I think he was up there. Bill had to carry him around all his life. He actually cried when he died.
Yeah, I think Bill is a tenant here, but his brother lives at Tookley, and I think they all threw in and bought a place like a holiday house. So he spends time up there, like
he had to carry him
and things like that, but he's permanent resident.
What number Windmill Street is he living in?
Well, seven.
Two doors, I mean.
About 11?
11.
11, is it? Okay.
He's a nice man.
All right. Well, we're just about coming to the end of our interview. Is there anything else you people want to talk about?
Not that I can think of. I'm very happy. If I state my case, I think I'm very happy here, and I'm just know I'll have to leave at some time, but I just want to stay here as long as I can.
And you, Bill?
No, I can't think of anything else I want to say.
Well, thanks very much, both of you, for the interview.
Yeah, pleasure.
Thank you. So I'll just conclude it, and this is then the end of the interview with Eileen and Bill Pearson. And the end of tape number MP FH2 side B.